Okay. So, let's see. Tonight, our leader gives her a great pleasure. It gives me a great pleasure. I've known this lady since she walked in. So, I know. Wow. It takes what it takes to get up here. It really does. And I've seen this lady do this. She deserves to get up here. So, my great pleasure to introduce Kim.
Hi, I'm Kim and I'm an alcoholic. And this is my sixth sober Christmas. This is as lit as I get for Christmas now. As alcoholic, there are some things I just don't understand, and one is I don't understand the concept of wine tasting, and I don't understand the concept of having a wine rack in your home, you know what? And I don't understand how on December 6, 2011, I walked into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and asked a woman who was a stranger to me to be my sponsor, and that became my sobriety date. And she said I couldn't drink between meetings. Who knew? And I had to call her every night, and that was my first commitment to in Alcoholics Anonymous, committing to call someone every night. And I know that this time that I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous, because I am a bouncer, I came back for myself, but I didn't want to have to tell that sweet lady that I went out, and that helped keep me sober. It did. Also, until I learned that I could pray to have the obsession of the cravings removed every afternoon around 5 o'clock, which was my witching hour, I'd have to go outside and pull the hell out of the weeds, because that, and till it passed, and eventually it did. And so, you know, you could pray for that. Okay. And I came into Alcoholics Anonymous originally in October of 2003 because my family had a problem with my drinking. And I stopped drinking. That was my first sobriety date. And I was sober when my husband was diagnosed with colon cancer. And he was in the hospital having surgery. And so I'm sober, so he doesn't have to worry about me doing things. And And then after a couple years, I got a sponsor, but didn't really utilize her this first time in 2003. And I didn't do the steps because those were extra credit for the good kids. So I didn't do that either. And after a couple years, I started drinking again. And I just very recently realized that was because I'd stopped drinking, but I still had untreated alcoholism. And they say that more will be revealed, and there isn't a timeline on that. So I have my 5 years of sobriety, but I just now figured out the untreated alcoholism. And to treat alcoholism, you do the steps and other things. So I was born. I was born in a family. And I guess kind of unusual, I ended up with the same parents I started out with. You know, they stayed married together and all. And the alcohol came out during gatherings, and I remember the whole thing, the adults drinking their drinks, and for some reason I was fascinated by the ice tongs and the ice bucket and all that. When I was very young, I accidentally, picked up a beer and drank it in front of my parents. Isn't that cute? Look at Kimmy. And, that may not have been really Good, because I did that. I learned useful. I want to be useful. I learned useful things to do, like how to shuffle cards and how to pour beer without getting too much foam on it. And I was very young, and I didn't, but I wasn't drinking. It wasn't a problem. I drank, you know, now I wonder, where were my parents? Because I was, as a teenager, I drank the sweet stuff, the Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill, the Annie Green Spring, you know, that stuff. Rum and Diet Dr. Pepper, you know, were still sweet. My mother made Kahlua and put it in a bottle, and it had to do whatever it did under the kitchen sink. That went really good over vanilla ice cream, but that's not really drinking, right? Because I'm not drinking it, I'm eating it. Same with brandied fruit. That's not drinking. My first drunk was grad night from high school, because my boyfriend had to work, and it didn't occur to me to just, I could go by myself. So I tried to make friends with a bottle of champagne. And I tried many times over the years, and we never got along. So the next morning, I had a hangover, and I thought, well, this is interesting. I've heard that so many times. Someone drinks for the first time, they get a hangover, and said, yeah, you know, where is it? Bring it. And I did. But my drinking alcoholically was a slower, much slower. It's like the old, well, maybe the people still have them, the pull start lawnmowers, you know, you have to really, and then finally it catches. I finally caught, and I was drinking, and I was able to not drink when it was necessary. For example, when I had two daughters, and during the pregnancies, I didn't drink. I also didn't drink while I was with my daughter's father, because he was abusive. And yeah, he only hit me one time, but I only needed that one time to be afraid. And I couldn't drink, because he would be gone for a few days and he'd come home 4 in the morning randomly and he'd start yelling at me. I had to stay alert, so I couldn't drink, you know, or relax or really eat. But you know, so I finally walked away from that, and eventually I met someone who became my third husband, and then I was able to relax and drink again. I said, well, this poor guy married a woman with two kids, and underneath all that, he married an alcoholic, too. He'd already done his drinking when he was younger. He was through with that. He didn't really drink. And he would see me drink, and he said, are you drinking that, or is it drinking you? And I said, what's he mean by that? And one night, because I like to hide it. And one night, we had a hot tub right in front of the living room of the house, and the curtains were open. But I had the living room light off, but the kitchen light was on, right? So I'm being stealthy. He's in the hot tub. I'm drinking wine. And he comes in and he says, have you been drinking? No, I'm not going to answer. A little bit. He watched me. Oh, that was a blatant lie. He saw me doing it. I said, oh, a little bit. But that was my one thing I always lied about. You go to a doctor. Do you drink? Oh, just a little bit. You know, a couple bottles a night. But, you know, it's just, you lie. I lied. But I was checking my face for broken surface capillaries. You know, I didn't want anyone to know. But, you know, apparently people knew. I'm sure my family knew. My family knew. So I tried to get sober off and on, but I didn't do the one thing that would have done is I still refused to do the 12 steps. And I'd go in and go out and go in and go out. I have a tattoo, and in the summer months you could see it because I wear tank tops and stuff. It's a bird on my shoulder, and people say, "Oh, you know, what's it mean?" I just say, "Oh, you know, Mr. Bluebird on my shoulder. Everything's nice and nice." My real reason why I got it when I got it was so there would be something pretty about me. So I have a pretty tattoo, and out of respect for the group, I won't show it to you right now. this isn't that kind of meeting, but you know, I have that, and but you know, it just, and I was sober when I got it, and I said, "Oh yeah, you have to be sober when you get a tattoo, because you know, you have to sign something." And I thought it was because then you can't go back and say, "Hey, why'd you do that?" And it's another thing I found out later. It affects your circulation and your bleeding and all that. I don't know, but anyway, bird's still with me. See, I was really nervous when I got up here. Now I'm so relaxed. I could say, "Anyone want to see it? Just meet me out." So I was drinking off and on, like I said, and just thought I was being really stealthy and you know, and I lived in Napomo. I worked in San Maria. I lived in Napomo, and I had everything that I could want. I had two healthy kids. I had a husband who loved me. I was living to like an acre in Napomo. I had a horse and I was singing the, you know, poor me thing. And I was just, all I could think, my drinking, you know, I said, King Alcohol, John Barleycorn, whatever you want to call it. I thought it was really cool to call it demon, you know, demon rum and spirits, you know, because it made me feel, well, now it makes me feel stupid, but at the time it made me feel really, you know, good, because that I was able to flirt with danger. And it just, you know, my parents moved from my childhood home, and they got a place in Napomo. And I would go to see my parents on the way home from work. So I worked in Santa Maria, and usually my father would be taking a nap, and I'd ask my mom, "You want something?" And that meant, "Would you like me to get you some wine?" We didn't call it that. "You want something to drink, Mom?" "No." "Do you want something? Can I get you something?" "Yeah." I'd pour two glasses, drink one, refill it, and then I'd take hers out to her. So, you know, I was already one up on her. And I was such an alcoholic by that point. I hope I don't, offend anybody, but I was drinking boxed wine. That was how low I went. No, there it was. You know, and it was red wine. I'm a Chardonnay drinker, I was. And I drank it, and then I'd go home. And, yeah. Well, at least half drunk, if not more. And it didn't bother me to drive drunk. I did it a lot. The music sounds better. It sounded better in my car. Aha. There's others out there like that. And my husband said, "You know, when you go out there and drive that way, that you're offering everything we have on a silver platter." And I never got a DUI yet. I didn't have any accidents up to that point. And so I'm, you know, bopping around, doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm going to work. I'm, you know, taking care of family in a half-assed way because I'm drunk. I'm a wino. Yeah, I was smart, you know. I kept coming up with different things, and I'd go to parties. I didn't want to drink there too much, because then people could see me. You know, I don't need to say, "Hey, haven't you had enough?" So I would drink before I went, and it was those little four packs of the bottles of wine. I'd get those, and I don't know what you guys did, but for us ladies, those fit in the purse really nicely. And if you put something between them so they don't rattle, because that gives it away. And I'd go to the party, and I'd have, you know, something, and my husband couldn't understand how with only two drinks I could get so drunk. And I couldn't tell him. And I'd refill the little bottles from a big bottle, because that's more economically responsible. So I'm doing that. I'm just, you know, tooling along. And then 2007, my mom passed away, and my husband, remember the one with the colon cancer? His cancer came back, and I was drinking. I was in total denial because he had beat it before. He's going to beat it this time. And then in January of 2000, I'm sorry, my mother passed away in 2007, and in January 2008, my husband passed away from metastasized colon cancer. I was there when he passed, and I hadn't been drinking then. I was drinking Diet Coke, which, you know, so I wasn't drunk then. And that put me in a tailspin, because I had a plan. We had a plan. I was going to retire. He was going to retire, and yeah, yeah, yeah. And now this big rock had been dropped into my path, and I had to find a way around it. You know, and I did drink, and I was taking care of my father, because after my mom passed away, it became evident that my father had dementia. So I moved in with my dad and took care of him. And I was being a good daughter, and I really tried not to drink till after he went to bed. And sometimes I was successful, sometimes I wasn't. And if you, ridiculous is when a drunk person is arguing with a man with dementia. It's two kindergartners. There's just, and I had to be right. I had to be right over really stupid things. And that was before I learned that I'd rather be happy than right. And I have a lot of regret. You know, I regret my past, and I hope someday to be relieved of that. But came up with little ways to, I'm going to get sober. I don't need you people. I got a calendar with little metallic star stickers, and I put it on the calendar in the morning, because that was going to mark my sobriety. And in the evening, I'd have to scrape it off, or the next morning, because I, tomorrow I'm going to get sober. Tomorrow. One night, I was drunk. I didn't feel like cooking dinner for my father and me. So I got in my car, and I drove. I was going to go get some fast food. And near where my father lived, so you go up a street, and you turn, and then that street kind of curves. And I didn't make the curve. And the people that lived there, the older couple, and they had one of those horseshoe driveways. And in the driveway near the street, they had a little pickup truck for sale. I hit it. But my airbags didn't go off. It was at night. Nobody came out. My car still ran, so we're good. So I backed up, and I went, and I got the food. And now I cannot understand, because I was drunk. Even by my standards, I was drunk. And that was on a Monday. In the big book somewhere is a story of a couple of guys that hit a car and nothing happened. Nobody, the police didn't come after him. And I thought, well, that worked once, but it might not work for me. So a couple of days after that, I went and I talked to the people. And I said, you know, that was me that hit your truck. And they said, oh, thank goodness, it's you. We thought it was a couple of drunks. I just smiled because, you know, it was just one drunk. Just one drunk. And, later I found out that that's called felony hit and run. So they said, well, what do you want to do about this? I said, well, can I buy your truck? Because, you know, and okay, I'm not making this, well, I wasn't making any of this up, but this especially, they took some of the price off of it because it was wrecked now. No. Eventually, I had the truck towed to my dad's, you know, around the corner. Eventually, I sold that truck, and I used the money to buy a playground set for my kids at my house, my grandkids. And, yeah. So, anyway. But I'm still drunk, and I've had it. I wasn't able to get sober on my own. I'm going to come back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, or I'll do something else. I'm not going to do something else. At one point I had, you know, I said, oh, you know, poor me, I'm going to kill myself. So my daughter and son-in-law took all my guns. I mean, that don't have a lot of them, that doesn't sound right. But they took them. And they eventually got them back, but they took me seriously. You know, and what I was really saying was, I don't want to go on like this anymore. This isn't right. I want a do-over. My life is, you know, this isn't how it's supposed to be. Isn't there a do-over? Because, you know, there aren't any do-overs in life. And this isn't a Disney movie. And I'm going to come back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went, and I was going to meetings. I was still drinking because, you know, I told myself, that's what I do. That's what we do. We do. We drink. No, we don't. Drunks drink. Alcoholics do not. I'm a recovered alcoholic now. So I went, and I was doing the sitting on the wall, staring at my shoes, got a little braver, stared at your shoes. And eventually, you know, it's hard to make eye contact. I could do it now. Hi, I'm Kim. I'm an alcoholic. I could talk to strangers. I couldn't do that before. Could not. And there was a couple in there that the man, after me, the man said, do you have a sponsor? I said, no. I said, ask her, pointing to his wife. So I waited till people were through talking to her, and I said, hey, can you be my sponsor? She said, yes. And she told me the bad news. I couldn't drink between meetings, and I was doing the 90 meetings in 90 days. And I was really proud of that, but she said I had to do it over and this time not drink between meetings. So, okay, I did that. I started doing the steps with her. When I was 11 months sober, my father passed away, and I was still in the new stages, the sorting out stages, and it wasn't till later that I realized that that was my no matter what, as in, don't drink or use no matter what. That was my first no matter what, but it didn't occur to me to drink. So at least by that time, I starting my sobriety and all, and then the place next to my sponsor came up for sale in a mobile home park, and she said, I'm not telling you what to do, but and I bought it and I moved in and I had my sponsor right next to me. And then she was going to move, so you have to finish the steps because she got another sponsor for me and said she wants you to finish the steps before you, and said, okay. So I finished the steps, so I've done the steps. My favorite one was the fourth step, where I became responsible for my own life. I was no longer the victim of the universe. Things that happened, I had a part of. And I really worked on that fourth step, writing it, and then after I did it, and a sponsor ran it through a paper shredder. You know, my creation. But now I'll tell you that helps me when I get upset, or, well, I do, because I'm still human. So, okay, Kim, what was your part in this? Oh, yeah, that. And one of the things that kept me from coming back to AA after my husband passed away is I was mad at God. I thought that was my, you know. And I was a power greater than myself thing. But I'm mad at God. I was raised in a religion, and I never had a relationship with God. I had that's another thing I've learned, says God wants you to have a relationship with Him, not a religion with Him, and all that. I had the religion. You could ask me the questions, and I could give you the answers and get the little holy card. I just gave it away for coming up with the right answer. But I didn't have I was afraid of God. And then He took my husband. So, that's part of. Are you willing to go to any length to get sober? Are you going to take the leap of faith and change your life? I didn't want to live the way I was. I was miserable to be starting each day out with a hangover and optimism that would be the day I was going to be sober. And then by the afternoon, the hangover's gone and, oh, that wasn't so bad. I could do this tomorrow. I'll get sober tomorrow. And then I just kept on. And I come in and said, fix me. Okay, you have to do this, this, and this. You have to find a power greater than yourself. So I had to work. I had to get a power greater than myself. So I did. And my relationship with my higher power, whom I choose to call God, that's what's comfortable for me, grows every day. Every day. This morning I was outside. I have a couple dogs, and I take them outside in the morning to, And I looked up at the sky, and there's a little sliver of a moon, and I started talking to God. I said, happy birthday. And I felt a warmth. And, you know, this morning was frost. There was frost on the pumpkin this morning, but I felt that. And I get that. I never got that. I never had a relationship with God. And to be able to trust something, someone I can't see. And it's just has transformed my life. Sobriety has transformed my life. I went over this morning to my family. Both my daughters and their families live together. And open presence. And this, my daughter gave me this. I didn't have books in a cover, and they signed it, and I have, they put pictures, my family, my kids, grandkids, wow, in there. And I was taught what you do with your big book, and here's my name, and here's my sobriety date in ink. So if I change that, it's going to screw up the book, isn't it? And I don't want to do that. But I want to keep going forward with my life. I picture different things. I have a imagination, whatever you want to call it, which is a lot nicer than twisted thinking, isn't it? But it does that too. And you ever drive out of one of these parking lots with the spikes? So if you back up, you're going to rip your tires. That's what I imagine. I don't want to go back. I know what my life is like, drunk, wino, whatever you want to call it. And no, I wasn't bad. I didn't drink it out of a, no. But, out of a paper bag, and I didn't sit on the curb at the store. No, I was better than that. I went to it. I waited till I got out to my car and defied gravity. You know, you could still drink with your head down in the bottle. It isn't easy. And this other little thing is I didn't drink at work. You know, the things that I was proud of. Well, I wasn't that bad. I didn't. But as soon as I got out to my car, I would drink that wine that's been sitting in the center console all day. Yes, it was hot. Hot wine. Mm. But I'm an alcoholic, and I'll drink it. And I'll drink it. And I don't know about any of you, but I made up a lot of little rules for Kim. And one of my rules was anything I drink before I get home doesn't count. So anything I drank, drinking and driving, those little bottles of wine I told you about, I have big hands. I could kind of like cover a whole, yeah, that's not obvious, is it? No. And all that. This past New Year's Day, I went out to eat with a friend, and we were coming back, and I saw a sobriety checkpoint. I got excited. I did. So I pulled up there, rolled my window down and said, hi! And it was obvious I hadn't been drinking, I finally had to leave. I wanted to stay there and just... isn't that the dream of a recovered alcoholic, that you can stop at a sobriety checkpoint and say, can't get me. I gave you all kinds of chances for years. But no. So my life today, I go over to see my family, my grandkids, and we're like, Grandma! Oh, one of my grandkids, my 7-year-old granddaughter, I have a necklace that says Grandma on it. She picked it out for me. And that's really special to me. And I have these pictures that they gave me that they're in my book. Today I could be a responsible person. Now, this is only my second time speaking. My first time was as a 10-minute earlier this month, and then Kristen said, oh, and I said, okay. I thought, I'm going to do this. I was really nervous, but Jose really calmed me down. thank you, Jose. It's this, now I have a home group. My home group is 7 a.m., Five Cities Group, also known as the Mesa, and I started coming here the 8:30 Sunday morning here at the 1600 is my adopted home group. I started coming here because they changed the format of the Sunday 7 a.m. Mesa meeting, and it pissed me off because I don't like change. So I took my toys and brought them here, and I found sobriety here. I found acceptance. I found love. I come here once a week, well, except for this morning because Christmas thing. But I'm welcomed, and it only takes a few times to coming to any meeting to. Make friends, and it's no longer a strange face. It's Dank comes up. He comes up to the Mesa. Hey, So, you know, he'll, oh, yeah, see? So we just, you know, go from meeting to meeting, and then, yes. No? And then you make friends. I know that sounds really, you know, kindergartner, but I always, when I'm a people pleaser, and I want people to like me, and I could say that now that I'm sober and all I've developed a backbone, and if you don't like me, that's okay. Not everybody has to like me. I've heard that you could come into a room and there's 10 people and 8 of them think you're great, and there's 2 that say, eh. And you'll focus on the 2. Now, I do. So, you know, but I don't need that anymore. I used to have to seek identity from what I did. My identity came from my job. I had to retire after 31 years of that because I broke my hip. For a long time, I thought I broke my hip because I tripped because I was drunk. But you know, I have osteoporosis. My hip would have broken then or at some point. But yeah, God's punishing me now. But yeah, so that's not what that was. And I was doing the birthday meeting up at the Mesa for a while. That became my identity. That was hard to give up because then I'm not anything, but I am. I used to joke around with a coworker about, let's go get drunk and be somebody. And when I did that, I was just a drunk. And now I'm mom, mother, I'm grandma, I'm a friend. The roads are safer for all you people because I'm not driving drunk. And, you know, I have service commitments. I have 4 of them right now, and I'm hoping to pick up another one by getting on the convention committee for the other county. And I did identify, I think, the first time I came here as an out-of-towner, and after that I was just under the radar, and you guys let me stay, so that's cool. But, you know, like I said, this is my adopted place. And I don't know how to tell you this, people, but some people say, oh, you go to Santa Maria, isn't that rough? Said, I haven't noticed. I just, this people, I get so much. Because, see, God talks to me. I love animals. I especially love raptors, you know, the hawks and everything. God talks to me. He'll show me an owl, a hawk, and he'll talk to me directly, and he also talks to me through the people in these rooms. And you never know who's going to have the message. And I just get so much. I couldn't get sober on my own. I tried. I tried all my dumb little ways. And, you know, if you don't know what the problem is, you can't fix it. If you don't know what the illness is, you can't treat it. And I didn't know. I was so thankful to find out I'm an alcoholic and not a psychotic than I thought I was. As I said, how do you feel? I don't know how to describe this. And, you know that the game that you little pinball game, the ball, then it could go down different slots. My ball went down the one that said alcoholic, and I'm so glad because there's something I could do. I'm sober today because of Alcoholics Anonymous, and because I'm going to meetings, and I'm of service, and I have sobriety. I don't have the untreated alcoholism that I did. So if you stop drinking, you have to have something to replace that, the alcohol. Alcohol was so big in my life that, oh, gee, what am I going to do now? Get sober. Be of service to others. I wasn't of any use to myself, but I am now. I could look in the mirror now, and I haven't worked up to the part where you say, I love you. I can't do that. But I could say, Kim, you're okay. And that's a start, right? And I think I'm okay, and thank you very much.